I am thrilled to have you today, Alan. Thankful that you had the time in your busy schedule to still do this, as I understood you're going to be busy the next couple of days.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So, Rebecca, I will just start with a quick introduction of what the podcast is all about and why I thought you would be a great person to have for this show. So it's the diary for young professionals. And I am a strong believer that mindset is the beginning of everything. So I wanted to start off in May with a podcast on mental wellness, mental health, emotional health. And then to touch on that as an opening for May, because I feel it's quite important given the times that we are in. And then given that, I just found out that within 40 seconds, one person commits suicide, which means by the time that we finish this discussion, within 30 minutes, we would have potentially lost a couple of lives due to mental health and wellness. And I believe not many companies speak about this, or even individuals. It's still a taboo to speak about mental health. It's something that has just started recently because of the need to do so. So I'm really happy to have you, given your background. And I know that you're doing your PhD in public health. So maybe you can dive in and introduce yourself to...
Okay. I hope you can hear me well. My name is Rebecca Frimpong. I have my master's in public health, and I'm a current doctoral candidate in public health as well at Capella University. And for my master's program, I actually did my capstone project, my thesis on suicide. Suicide in light of disasters. So the connection between natural disasters and how people, not only natural disasters, I can get into that a little bit more. So yes, I did my thesis and my capstone project on disaster and the relation between suicide, in particular after Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. And I also have my bachelor's in psychology from Virginia Commonwealth University, which was a degree that is heavy in psychological theory, but also life science and biopsychology. And so that's my education background. And my more recent work, so for the work that I've been doing recently, I've been working in emergency management and emergency response and working for the last 3 years or so, responding to natural disasters in the United States. Anything ranging from hurricanes to wildfires to tornadoes, floods, and even teaching people about preparedness and safety. And with the current, COVID-19, pandemic that's going on around the world, that also falls into emergency management and emergency response. And I most recently got signed on to a new contract, working towards helping hospitals, kind of survive through the COVID-19 pandemic. And so my work is really centered around, public health and emergency management. And when it comes to talking about, suicide and suicide prevention, there's a lot of overlap within that, because unfortunately people commit suicide for different reasons, and there's different triggers that are involved with the onset of suicidal thoughts and tendencies, as well as the mental health aspect of it, where there are certain mental health diseases that can have the correlation or the connection to suicide.
Thanks a lot for that introduction, and I am quite impressed by your work, especially also you said you just got a new contract working on COVID-19, and you've been working on various emergency situations. What would you say to people right now who do not consider the scenario that we are in right now as an emergency? Because I've heard a lot of young folks saying, well, it's just a flu, it's nothing else. And then people are some still going to work as usual. So what would you say to people out there who are not understanding the situation that we are in, given you've worked in various emergency scenarios and you also tagged this COVID-19 as an emergency as well?
So I also have a postgraduate certificate in epidemiology. So I also have a little bit of expertise in looking at epidemics and also viruses and infectious disease. So it's very difficult sometimes for people to understand how viruses work. And I think that's one of the reasons why this particular emergency is very unique, because the imminent danger is an invisible danger. And it's really hard for people to say, you know, I'm going to take this seriously, or I'm going to be scared, because they don't see it right in front of them. They don't see it coming. And working on other emergencies and other disasters, That same mentality applies even to hurricanes and earthquakes and wildfires and floods, because you don't necessarily see them coming until it's too late. And often that is the hard part of emergency management, is preparing, getting people to feel more comfortable with preparedness and understanding the importance of being prepared for an emergency and how it will help save lives. And so for this particular outbreak that we're having, it's very real, because people are losing their lives every day. And also with viruses, they can mutate, they can change how they're spread. They can, the symptoms or the onset of viruses can change over time. And especially when a lot more people are getting the virus and either working up an immunity towards the virus, which means that they for some reason do not get very ill or sick or die from the virus, or if their bodies are finding a way to just fight the virus a little bit longer before it can actually do a lot of damage to their body. There's a lot of people walking around as what we would call, you know, potential carriers of this virus, or that have this virus and may not know it. And therefore, those around us whose immune systems are not strong enough, they can get very sick from this virus. So it's really hard to explain sometimes to people, you need to be careful and be somewhat fearful of something that you can't see, and that there, and also be aware of the fact that it may or may not come today. You could get sick 2 weeks from now. You could get sick tomorrow. You could get sick next week. You don't know. And I think that uncertainty as well is why you're seeing a lot of people having mental health issues, because that uncertainty brings about anxiety for some people. It also can bring on depression, and it also can just bring on, you know, paranoia, which is linked to all those different things. And so it's just really important to try to get people to understand it is real. It is something that you need to be aware of. And even if you were to make that comparison, well, it's just like the flu, it's just like anything else, the flu also kills, thousands of people every year. And for me as a public health clinician, you know, I deal a lot within numbers, and also associating those numbers with people's lives. And that's something that I think the media has desensitized people to feeling the impact of numbers. You know, people hear 1,000 and they don't get scared. People hear 10,000 and they still don't get scared. But, you know, one human life is enough for us to take it seriously. It's enough for us to think about, you know, what are we doing to get, prepare ourselves to combat this virus, or what are we doing to have this virus, you know, go away and not harm any more people than what it already is.
Thank you for that. What I did take from your message are three things. And one side of it was the strengthening the immune system during this period of time, because I would like to address those people who do not have the privilege to social distance. I understand from some of my peers that they still need to check in to work, and then they meet various people, and then the chances of getting infected, I heard, are quite high. So I also understood from you on the strengthening of the immune system being important. And on the other hand, this other type of issue when it comes to saving lives, where we're not just purely talking about the viral type of deaths, but also the emotional type of consequences due to anxiety, depression, paranoia that come with such a crisis. And you do have people who, because of the, you know, the whole wave of news that is coming in on this topic, where people are getting paranoid and are getting quite anxious and are potentially, you know, leaning into this mental health issue type of box. And then so for us today, I would like us to really touch on the second part, which is this mental aspect of the whole situation that we are in, which people don't really talk about. I understand from your background that you are quite well versed in this topic. And sometimes I do get the question, what is mental health? And is it different to emotional health? How do I prevent having mental health issues during this process, or even post-COVID, where you do have two type of extremes of young people? You have the people that are suddenly 24/7 with people they were not having so much time with, and you do have those conflicts coming up. And then you do have those people who are more on the extreme singles, who are suddenly all alone by themselves and having to deal with all these emotions of anxiety, depression, or paranoia. So just maybe to touch on those who don't understand the subject, what is mental health, and what are the issues that are, you know, compassing this topic that you have met during your times when dealing with the various crises that you were in Ecuador, I understood as well.
It's Puerto Rico. So,
my bad.
Yeah, no problem. And so, you know, it's a great question. And I wanted to touch on some things that you spoke about too. You know, it social distancing is a privilege. And that's one of the things that's a little bit daunting for people around the world, because to social distance yourself, that means that you actually have the ability, the money, the accessibility to be able to position yourself where you are away from everyone in your surroundings and still able to survive, on your own. And that's not something that everyone in the world can do. And I think where the public health clinicians and practitioners, and those within the government have failed in doing is letting people understand the other things that they can do to protect themselves. Not just social distancing, but keeping in mind best practices when it comes to staying vigilant about being exposed to viruses and practicing certain sanitation methods, not just washing your hands, but also being aware of the surfaces that you touch, how often you touch certain surfaces, where viruses can stay on for a long period of time. And then also making sure that when you go back to your home, that you're removing clothes and removing possible pieces of clothing that have made possible contact with the virus or someone who might have the virus. So just being able to practice a lot of other methods of preparedness and protection is really important as well. And I wish there was more information like that out there for people, instead of the information that makes it seem so desperate and dire, where there's only two things you can do and that's it, or there's three things you can do and that's it. And those are the most effective things that you can do, but there's other things you can do as well to try to protect you and your family or your friends on a daily basis. That you should always, you know, keep in mind at all times. And it goes beyond just washing your hands and hand sanitizer, but just being very careful of how you are around in your different surroundings. But getting some mental health, I mean, I could write a book on that. I could write a book on it because there's been a lot of new terminology that's been brought to the public from the realm of psychology to make it so that people feel more comfortable with a lot of the terms that are out there, being more aware, being more active. And one of the things that I did about a year ago is I got a mental health first aid training. And this is something that's very similar to CPR training, first aid training, but having the ability to understand when someone is having a mental health issue and they need your support or they need an advocate to be there so that they can be safe. And when it comes to mental health, that's really what you're talking about when you're talking about the brain and the brain's function. And it's something that's very tricky because people disassociate the brain from emotion. And really the brain is where emotion is stored. And it's really important for people to understand that the brain is an organ. So just like if someone says you have heart disease, they're talking about your heart as the organ in your body that is not functioning well anymore. So when we talk about mental health, we're literally talking about someone's brain and that particular organ in their body not functioning very well, not functioning up to optimum health where it should be. And because we all have very different genetics and we all have different DNA markers that come from our genetic background, our mental health can be influenced a lot by genetics, and it can be influenced by your environment, and it can be influenced by trauma. So these are the three main areas where you see a lot of mental health issues come from and are influenced by. So for example, schizophrenia is a genetic mental health disorder or disease. But some things like anxiety and depression can be triggered from trauma or can happen because of trauma or can happen because of the environment that you are in, a stressful environment or being exposed to certain things that can affect your mood. Also drug use can also trigger a mental health disease. And we've seen an influx of opiates being used, and this includes cocaine and heroin and other illicit drugs that can trigger neurotransmitters, and those are the small transmitters that are in the front cortex of your brain that have been related to particular mental health illness like schizophrenia or psychosis. So that was my long, I was trying not to make it super scientific, my answer, but that was a long drawn out answer of what mental health is. So basically, just if people can think of their brain as an organ in their body, and just like any other organ in your body, there's, we're talking about the health of that organ, the health of your brain. So that's like we talk about, you know, cardio, which is heart, pulmonary, the lungs, gastro, which includes your intestines, your stomach, your gallbladder, and even your liver and kidneys at times. So we're talking about like different sections of our body and the health of making them, of keeping them functioning, keeping them maintained so that you can have a productive life. So that's really what mental health is in a nutshell, and why we shouldn't be so apprehensive or scared to talk about it.
Absolutely. I loved your description, and I also learned something as you're talking about this mental health first aid, which I've never heard before. And I find that quite interesting, because it puts into perception really the brain as an organ, like you say, because people talk about CPR, people talk about first aid, and immediately think of the physical administration of first aid. Whereas right now, I love that. I absolutely didn't know about that. I also feel as young professionals, we are at these special times in an environment that is exposing everyone to quite stressful situations. And you speak about mental health being triggered by the environment, by, you know, being exposed, or somebody using drugs, which I have heard that this is also on the spike during these times. And I would just like to go to something that I read in your profile that I found quite profound. And it dates back to 2008, when you started what you called Mama Africa. And I loved the fact that you started that when your mom had passed, which I'm so sorry about that. But I find that you found joy in something. And I felt that you found meaning in loss. And I feel during these times that a lot of young people are exposed, people are thinking more of the COVID scenarios, linking it to the virus, but the world hasn't stopped, which means all these stressful things that happen to people on a day-to-day still happen, and then people are still losing their loved ones, people are still being neglected, people are still even at work being required to perform in some instances at 100%. And I would like to draw back to your time in 2008 and hear from you how that journey was, because I believe loss is something that is quite difficult to deal with. And I feel in these times of crisis, or in any emergency for that sake, for any young adult or any person, the life doesn't stop. So you still have people experiencing the day-to-day life tragedies. And I would like to really draw from you a live example of how you carried yourself forth to where you are now, which is quite an extraordinary journey, because you have those people who are still going through those moments. And like you said, who are not privileged enough to draw back from society and still are required to perform at 100%, even though their brain structure is not at that 100% per se.
Yeah, so I started Mama Africa for a couple of reasons. It was more so dedicated to the memory and the spirit of my mom, because I did not know until she passed all the people that she had helped. and she had helped a woman escape an abusive relationship. She saved a woman from human trafficking and got her reunited with her children. My mom helped so many different people and embodied the spirit of what it really means to be a mother, to be a parent, that I felt that instead of staying in my grieving and staying in that place that I was in, that it would be better for me to heal, kind of like in her light. And she also, her death is also the reason why I became a public health clinician. She died because her doctor made a mistake, and her doctor did not want to admit the mistake. But at the time, I was still, a young scientist. I had just graduated and I was working on several research studies, and I was working at the hospital that my mom went to for this outpatient, supposed to be very simple procedure called an ERCP. And, so electron microscope probe. And, it's supposed to be something that was very simple, but the doctor made a mistake. And with the probe, it's like a very small fiber optic, camera. And on the end of the fiber optic, there's a little camera, and they can see everything that's like going on inside of you. So they put it through. There's different ways that they put it through the body, but this particular procedure, they put it through your esophagus. So it's kind of like you swallow it. And, he pierced her pancreas with this camera. And because he did not read my mother's medical records, he did not realize until it was too late that piercing her pancreas, was a death sentence for her. So my mom had pulmonary, disease and issues. And, every doctor is supposed to notice. But if a person gets pancreatitis or has any pancreas issues and they have a history of pulmonary disease or currently have it, it can cause all of the organs in their body to shut down. And that's what happened to my mom. After he pierced her pancreas, she developed pancreatitis and within a week became septic, and all of her organs started to shut down one by one. So after that happened, I just became really obsessed with this. I was trying to figure out how doctors and patients can have a better conversation with one another. And the first thing that I came up with was the idea behind Mama Africa, which was if mothers knew all the information that they needed to know about having a healthy pregnancy, they could then empower themselves to take care of themselves during their pregnancy, even if they don't have a lot of money or a lot of resources. But then also when they go to the doctor for their regular checkup, they know what to tell the doctor and they know what to ask the doctor. And one of the number one, there's just two issues that are killing mothers around the world when it comes to maternal health care. And one is preeclampsia, and the other one is related to a lack of folic acid, which is very important for the health of the baby and the mother during pregnancy. And it can cause things like low birth weight for the baby when the baby's born, which means they could have other issues and could possibly die. And then also, it's the low amount of folic acid is also linked to preeclampsia as well, which kills thousands of mothers around the world every year. So with the Mama Africa program, I made connections with different sponsors, and they worked with another nonprofit called Health Right International. They used to be a part of Doctors Without Borders. And we pretty much would just go into areas where mothers were at risk, and give them prenatal vitamins that were heavy in folic acid. And prenatal vitamins that did not have a lot of filter, processed fillers and stuff in them, but definitely had all of the vitamins that they needed. And we also would talk to the mothers about their birth process, finding places where it's safe, and then also ask them questions about what they need or what they didn't know what to do, and it's really getting this information and then sharing it with clinicians in their areas so that they knew what these mothers really need in their community. Because a lot of times it's not easy information for doctors and nurses to get. They just have people coming into the clinic or coming into the hospital. And a lot of times they don't have the ability to always ask these questions. And we were also very fortunate to help build a clinic in Katali, Kenya, near the Rift Valley. It was the only maternal clinic at that time for those women who used to travel over 2 hours by foot to Nairobi. And the funny thing is, on the opening day of the clinic, when I bought all the supplies and stuff there, a mother walked up the mountain to come to the clinic and gave birth right outside the door of the clinic. So we were there just in time to give her a blanket and, and vitamins and everything that she needed for her little baby, who was just beautiful. And so, so that was really what was behind, the Mama Africa program and kind of the story behind that. I know you asked me another question and I lost track of it.
And with that, let's take a small break and get back to the next roundup. Thanks a lot.
What's your story? What's your plan? Where you going to? Where do you stand? In this moment, take a chance. Feel the light shine down. Live your life out now. You can dance. Hear the laughter in the air. Let your voice be heard if you dare. Take the high road to your dreams. Let the world see.
Thank you so much. No, thank you, Rebecca, for sharing your story. And I absolutely and enjoyed listening to the whole motivation behind the Mama Africa. And you said two things that I really kept in my mind, which is, despite the size of your pocket, it's important as a patient to be able to ask your doctor or whoever is servicing you the right questions. And I think a lot of people always go into the doctor's office, giving them the power, the responsibility, and then not taking this dialogue, this conversation, what you mentioned, that you introduced this back and forth dialogue, not just between patient and doctor, but also between the doctors. And by that, reducing the amount of people that are being killed. What I also loved about your story, and it touches as well on this mental health aspect, is that in as much as accountability is to the doctors, and here I also give high respect, because I think it's not such an easy thing to have a parent who passed away because of a mistake. And I commend you in how you took this and then made it into a journey and then took over what your mom was doing before. And I really thank you for sharing that. And it touches as well to the mental health topic, where for us today, and it's not only for young professionals. I think it's really for everyone. And I like the mental health first aid. A lot of companies I know do the physical. Now I call it physical first aid, but it's what people call the first aid. And then now when I think about it, it doesn't make sense because you have a physical first aid and you have the mental first aid. And I think it's something that is powerful, that should be launched in most places and allow peers to notice when something is happening or starting, and to bring that sensitivity to the topic. So I think what you touched as well, we might have diverged, but not at all. I really thank you for sharing that. I was just going to drive us into another direction based on what you just said right now, and it touches on this mental health first aid. Who is capable to take a mental health first aid? Is it anybody, or does somebody need to have a certain background to do this? And how was your journey after the mental health first aid? How have you been able to use it in your day to day?
Yes, so the mental health first aid is really for people who are not practicing clinicians or doc, you know, like a psychiatrist or a psychologist. It's really meant to be for everyday people to be able to help someone in their community or even in their family that has mental health problems or issues. And so it's very interesting. The way that it's taught, it is about, I want to say that the course was like 8 hours long. So it's a very long certification process. And it includes a lot of very quick knowledge points for people to take in to try to get them to understand a little bit more about certain mental health issues and certain mental health diseases, and it gives you an overview of that, and it also gives you opportunity to practice. So there's a lot of role playing and scenarios, videos, and there's also several tests that you take at the end before you become certified. And anyone can sign up for the mental health first aid training. But it is only taught by people who have a background in psychology or are certified to teach these particular courses. And it's something that you would get, you know, renewed every, I think it's every 2 years. I think they're trying to keep it on the same one as the old cycle for CPR, but I think it's definitely good for people to get every year if they can, or at least to review it every year. And there was a great book that came with it that I just kept so that I could just go back to it and think about it. And it's a really different type of preventative action course than CPR and first aid. A lot of the issues that you're treating with CPR and with first aid are very acute, and they're like, it's super, super, super life-threatening, like right then and there, like you got to do something. And with mental health first aid, the situations may not seem to be acute or something where you have to like run in and like save the day. And I think that's why it's very easy for everybody to get this training and to learn something from it. And I think the best example is they had a video of it during the training that was really good. especially for people who have not experienced this before, but the particular individual in the video was bipolar and was having a bipolar episode, and they just were like very disoriented, kind of didn't realize where they were at the moment, and were very agitated, you know. So one of the things that happens a lot when people have certain mental health issues, whether it's bipolar, whether it's anxiety, which is something that's like a lot of people suffer from. I think that's the most common mental health issue is anxiety. They can become agitated. They can become, you know, a little. It might come off as them being angry or upset. And with the mental health first aid, you just talk about ways you can de-escalate that, but not using certain, you know, words to make someone feel bad or to make them feel even more stressed out. And that's just really, you know, what it's used for. So in this particular situation, you know, they were talking to the person. They were like, "Hey, you know, I'm right here. Do you remember? I'm here. And what are you feeling right now?" And just allowing that person to talk and to keep talking until you can contact their doctor, or until you can get to a point where you can safely contact. Some of these people have like emergency contacts that they want you to call anyway when they have an episode, and just, you know, and just doing things like that. So instead of calling 911, or instead of assuming that the person is violent because they have a mental health issue, mental health first aid really talks to those getting it about understanding how to like kind of de-escalate a situation, and to give that person resources while you are trying to help like make the situation better. So being able to say to someone, when they're like in a particular situation where they're having a psychotic episode, if that's what their mental health disease is, like, "I'm going to give you help. I'm going to get you to someone who can help." Not saying like, "I'm calling 911 on you," you know, but "I'm going to get you to someone who can help you." And so those are one of the things that we talk about, and one of the resources that you have, and that you're kind of sharing the resource with that person. But every situation is very different. But I think that it's still important for people to get mental health first aid training, because it helps people understand some of these diseases that they may have never even thought of or come into contact with. Or they might have known somebody with them and not realized that that was the issue. You know, you might have that person that you work with. They come through the door, and for some reason, they never look at you. They don't talk to you. They go right to their desk, and they're already like straightening things up on their desk. They're like putting things in order on their desk before they even say hello to people. That's a form of anxiety. It's a form of anxiety, and people may not realize that. And so it's really a great tool to, like, you know, educate people on different mental health issues that are there. And you probably end up asking more questions after you complete the course too.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Well, to wrap up, Rebecca, I would like to build up upon what you said. You know, there's the aspect of giving help and, you know, directing somebody to the right place for them to get help. I also, you know from your bio that one of the things that you do is you find ways to make communities more resilient after disasters, finding ways to mitigate and then also even for them to prepare at a community level. However, I would like to end off on an individual level, right? Because we speak of people. And we might be people who have experienced all these types of mental health issues that you spoke of. Anxiety, what you said, is quite common. How would you say, or to what extent does an individual need to be accountable once they realize that they are dealing with a mental health issue, or might not even know, because a lot of times people do speak of helping out, etc. And I know it's something that you also work with to build frameworks and strategies around that. As a closing point, what is your takeaway message to an individual who might not be aware or who is experiencing some form of mental health issue?
But just to end on, I would like to say that there's just different levels of mental health. And one thing that makes it scary for some people is that, oh, mental health, oh, that means I'm crazy. If there's something wrong with me, there's different levels. Like this, like I said from before, think of the brain as an organ, the organ of your body. So, you know, if you have a heart attack, the people like no longer think that you should go out and work out with them. They won't invite you to their exercise class. No, they're not gonna, you know, discriminate against you because they think your heart is gonna explode or you have a heart attack. You know, so we need to look at mental health that way too. That there's different levels to it, and not everybody's case is so extreme where they have to be on medicine, they have to do counseling all at the same time and be heavily sedated and monitored. And there are some cases, unfortunately, where people's mental health disease is very, it's very intense and it requires a lot of help. And sometimes requires a lot of medicine or therapy. And for those particular individuals, you know, they need a huge support network and they need people that they can trust and they need people who are patient. And so that's a whole nother, you know, issue. But when we're talking about it, on an individual basis and you have someone that has something like low level anxiety, or GAD, general anxiety disorder, there are certain, levels of that are manageable, and maintainable and even to the point where you can get it where you don't have much anxiety anymore afterwards. And, you know, many people, benefit from meditation. They benefit from being active, doing sport. They benefit from being around people, having a situation where they're able to help people. You know, it's really different for everyone, but I think it's great that we think about the solution. And, you know, my suggestion to people is to try all the solutions that you can find. Don't try one solution, say it didn't work for me and then give up. So if meditation doesn't work for you, okay, now try exercise. Exercise doesn't work for you, okay, then try aromatherapy. That doesn't work for you, okay, then try cooking therapy. That doesn't work for you, try shopping therapy. Try hanging out with, you know, with people. For me, you know, even for myself, I don't have any major mental health issue, but you know, whenever I'm in a stressful situation or dealing with something that can trigger anxiety, I hike and I climb. I hike and do mountain climbing, and for me, it's just done wonders. And when I don't do that, I meditate. And you know, these are just very simple things that people can do. And when I was in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, that was a part of the program that I created and also part of my thesis proposal, was introducing people in Puerto Rico to, wellness programs along with therapy sessions. So I worked with two psychologists in Puerto Rico, two licensed psychologists, in Puerto Rico, and they had a free mobile clinic where people could come in and get free mobile sessions. And then I invited, two practitioners, one, a boxing trainer, from Blue Box Fitness, and then a yoga teacher, Sama. She's a yoga, a certified yoga teacher. And they would put together the wellness aspect. And this was for all ages. And it ended up being really, really helpful for the community that we were working in. We worked in the area called Campamento, Arcoacio near San Sebastian in Puerto Rico. And the, and the young people came out for the boxing, and it was great because, you know, their anxiety and their stress and their depression was coming because, you know, the roads were closed and blocked off because the hurricane had created these huge sinkholes. No one could get out. Like, you couldn't get out of your home. But for them being able to like walk down the mountain and take a boxing class, take a yoga class, you know, it just helped them just relax and to see the smiles on their face. Afterwards, it was great. And so, you know, like I said, these are the little things that you can do, to help keep your brain healthy. You know, you just gotta think about it that way. You're keeping your brain healthy. You're keeping your brain thinking, functioning. And, you know, so for me, the suggestion that I always offer to people is the wellness suggestion. You know, finding something where you can use your brain in a really positive way, that also helps keep your brain healthy. Because, I'm not going to get too much into the science. But when we do different wellness activities, it boosts certain, I'm going back to that word again, neurotransmitters in our brain, serotonin, dopamine. Mm-hmm. These particular neurotransmitters, when they're functioning properly, they also make us feel good. They also make us relax. They also make us focus. So these particular, activities that you can do can really help, you know, keep your brain healthy. So,
perfect. Perfect. Thanks a lot. Sounds like Maria is a cousin to COVID with the effects that it has, you know, the same.
Maria was crazy. Maria was hurricane. It was crazy. And it's similar in a way that the panic in just the chaos and the confusion, and the poor mismanagement within different governments around the world, and more in particular, the United States, a lot of the pitfalls, you saw in a microcosm in Puerto Rico on a smaller level, but it was the same. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, everyone is struggling and trying really fast to figure out a recovery. You know, how do we recover from this? How do we fight this? How do we get back? And this is my last little feature thing that I'll say is preparedness. You know, we need to prepare for things like this. We need to start making preparedness sexy again. You know, the fact that people
how do we
like,
do that?
By not having people who think preparedness is not sexy, giving them a microphone, tell them to stop talking. You know, like all of these, you know, especially in the United States, we have literally president, political figures who are telling people, yeah, it's not sexy. I'm not going to wear a face mask either. That's not cool. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, this is just, you know, there's nothing wrong with being prepared, being over-prepared. Like, just be prepared, because it's not going to hurt you to be prepared. And it's gotten to the point now where when you say be prepared, people are like, oh, be scared? You want me to be scared? And it's like, no, not be scared, be prepared, you know?
Be prepared,
And it will actually make people less scared when they are prepared. You know, fortunately, I was prepared, because this is what I do. And when they were like, you need a face mask and all this stuff, I actually had a face mask in my emergency kit, you know, that I keep with me at all times. So it's just something like, that's what I would love to see, people being like, you know what, I'm prepared and I feel good about it. I don't feel bad about it. So let's see how it goes.
That's a good message. That's a good message. Absolutely. And I think businesses as well do that. I mean, you have buildings that have this fire extinguishers. And it's not that they want a fire. You need it in case the fire happens.
Yeah. Yes.
Be prepared. That's a good message.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.